Welcome to the Performance Health Podcast. My name is Tim Caron. Today, we're going to be talking about managing open space. If you think about open space, it usually is going to be defaulted to, I'm going to put stuff on there, whether it's extra equipment or stuff I don't know what to do with. And then we lose out on a ton of programming options from speed progressions, plyometrics, general movements, things that we know we're going to have to incorporate within our program. So it's about preserving and protecting that space in order to optimize that and maximize that. If you like what you're hearing, please like and subscribe. Obviously share. Hopefully these are bringing a ton of value. Go deeper by going to phpodcast.com, signing up for our coaching membership. We have 50 hours plus of content there, whether it breaks down to programming reviews. I just did a breakdown of ascending and descending protocols. Web shows, which is a deep dive into a topic with a high-level strength and conditioning professional, or lectures that I've recorded over the years. I actually just added a free lesson breaking down the How to Become a Strength Coach book chapter by chapter and how you want to navigate each one of those sections so you can optimize your career in strength conditioning. If you like what you're hearing, head over to phpodcast.com to learn a ton more.
All right, Tim, we're back with season six, talking facility design. Today, we're talking just leveraging space overall. So how do we leverage our space? Let's just get right into it.
The first thing to talk about is what we talked about in episode one and two is space absolutely necessary? And if you're working with athletes, yeah, open space is going to be almost prerequisite. And you don't realize it until you get to a weight room that's just loaded with equipment. And you're like, oh, shoot, I have nowhere to do speed work, plyo work, change of direction work, et cetera. But if you can have it and you can have a space allocated to it, staying disciplined in that. And there's some, I think, great stories to talk about in how we struggle with open space and how we start filling it with stuff. And then it's a logistics problem of, oh, I got to move this out of the way in order to do these drills versus just moving it there when we need it. I don't know. There's always a very like interesting conversation around how do you manage the stuff that we're putting in this open space? And is that more of a logistical problem than it actually really needs to be?
So I it sounds like just most of the space we need for speed plyo work. Is that pretty consistent?
Yeah. I just did a post this morning on X talking about the development of speed for more of a mesomorph or wide orientation person. And it was alluding to this fact that developing more of the general nature for an athlete, as opposed to getting very hyper specialized. So if you have, let's say, Tim and Corey and they're your athletes and they're road graders, they just push stuff around, like they're going to really love the weight room and they're going to really resonate with that aspect. But then you start to expose them to top end speed cutting and they struggle. And if I don't have the space, I never really have to face that issue. And that's something that I think quite a bit about. And have you ever been in a situation where you're working non-power four or you're working high school or you're working in the Northeast and you don't have a lot of places to run in the winter? You can easily convince yourself you don't need it. And I would be the first to say this as a commercial business owner, that space costs money. And if I can't utilize that with absolute high ROI time things, probably going to just omit it. But when I'm working with athletes and I know there's an incredible deficiency that is just going to hinder our overall performance and potentially our resiliency, then you're going to eat that. But yes, the real answer is, okay, if you're working with athletes, space for the opportunity to do speed, whether that's acceleration or top end speed, or if it's change of direction work with power cutting, getting to a zero velocity or speed cutting, trying to minimize velocity loss as much as humanly possible, or even plyos. And plyos are one of those ones that you can get away doing in a very small radius, meaning I'm just doing in plate plyometric work, which the definition of plyometric is basically having as short of an amortization with a pre-stretch as possible and utilizing the non-contractile tissues, but the passive tissues to transfer energy. Yeah, you can get away with not having a huge field or turf to do that, but it's nice to have. And if I want to do bounding, if I want to do higher level plyometric work, that's going to take up more space and allow some of these athletes to express themselves in all planes of motion and covering ground or distance, you start to realize that's a really valuable thing to have. But the other aspect from a movement prep, and you think about it from, all right, a lot of the movement prep that we do outside of a rack, whenever you have to do a movement prep at a rack, you're spending a lot of time of navigating and orienting people so they're not bumping into the rack, the boxes that we have set up, the countless pieces of equipment that are strategized around a weight room, all this stuff. If I just have an open turf and I'm like, all right, go space, we're doing all of our movement prep stuff, whether it's a joint by joint or a corrective or a dynamic warm-up, it's nice to have. And you're talking about controlling groups. What I always, if you give me space, I'm going to do a very line-oriented, cadenced, dynamic warm-up just because I can see everything so much clearer and I can hold them accountable. And I mean, Corey, you were there for the first day we did our first dynamic warm-up at Army. We just set it as a precedent of we're going to do it this way. And I think back that experience. So I'll tell the story because I think it makes a big difference. So first workout, we're on the turf. We line up everyone on the goal line and we say, all right, we're going to go through knee hugs. And I'm going to give very clear instructions. You're going to start behind the line and you're going to finish past the 10-yard mark. And if you stop short, we're going to do it again. All right, let's see how serious I am, right? So everyone goes through. I counted 14 people who didn't finish past the line. Go back. Do it again. 10 people didn't do it. Go back. Do it again. Go back. Do it again. Go back, do it again. Because what I wanted to address at that moment was there's a right and a wrong way to do something. And I think about it as, imagine if I have them just around the weight room in that situation. There's so many blind spots. And I can totally see the eyes rolling of like, all right, I thought this could be talking about speed, agility, and quickness and plyometrics. But just from the opportunity to address something as fundamental as, I give you clear instructions. You chose not to do it. So we're going to do it till you do it. That part was instrumental in the overall impact I had on the program. I wouldn't have been a possibility if I didn't have that turf area to do that. And having an indoor is nice, but I don't necessarily think the accountability stuff or just the opportunity to coach in a different environment is there. And plus, if you work with field athletes and you get them in open field, whether it's turf or grass, whatever, they feel like they're closer to where they're going to be playing. That matters. And there's a motor learning component to this too. And if you ever go through motor learning in a college environment, one of the first lessons you have is people will expand to the size of the room or the lack thereof size. So if I have a huge indoor turf with 120 yards of turf from end zone to end zone, and I have 60 to 70 yards wide, then I have a huge space to work with, whatever the square footage of most indoor practice fields are. And that we usually spread to the length of the field and then try to get as much out of the width of the field and the length of the field. And what that does is really tell you that we're constrained by our environment. And if I put them in a weight room with a lot of equipment that's smaller, and people tend to become field restricted. And it's not a claustrophobic thing. It's just if we want to do top end speed or high level plyometrics or change of direction work, or if we want to expand and open up our perspective on what athletes are doing, when they're doing it, how they're doing it, having open space matters a great deal. And I don't want to get on a table of like, you don't have an indoor, like you can't do a good job. You can. And I don't think that where people are doing movement prep at their racks out of necessity aren't doing a great job and holding their athletes accountable. You can, but it's just easier in a lot of ways. And the symbolic nature of being in an open space for an athlete that wants to play in open space matters. Yeah. From the surface level, the opportunity to do the speed that you want to do, the change of direction you want to do, the plyometrics that you want to do, all that has a huge impact on the bottom line for your overall perspective and performance of your program.
So we talked a bit about, do you inherit your weight room? Did you get to design out your weight room? How can we maximize our space in a facility that we inherit? What are some tools we can get so we can still check those boxes for speed, development, plyos, all that?
What's funny, there's going to be always, when you inherit a weight room, you're inheriting everyone else's clutter and the story or the history of a piece of equipment that someone got a table and told administration that we need is a timeless tale. And I come in and anyone who's not familiar with working with high level athletics is whenever a new staff comes in is there for a reason. There was just something deficient or lacking, and you could always blame recruiting, et cetera. But truth is, when I inherit a program, it's because something was not there and I need to address that. And a lot of times something was not there because of these internal blockages that we create in clutter, unnecessary equipment, things that are useless. Probably pretty clear that you need to do something to address it. There could be a symbolism associated with that piece of equipment that's been collecting dust or just overly used or just not as valuable is a clear thing that we need to address right off the bat. So when you're thinking about the inheriting, there's always a moment of, I can get rid of stuff pretty easily to get me more space. And it leads into this conversation of, what would you do with that space if you had it, right? If you had a blank slate, so you had the opportunity to create it, what would you do with that? Do you feel insecure or anxious when you see open, unused space that's a blank canvas? And there's an exercise I utilize in my foundations course of, most strength coaches are bullet point. Listen, I'll land the plane on this metaphor, but I think it makes a big difference for when we're looking at the setup of our facilities. And the open space is an area that I think a lot of us struggle with, because it's just, there's nothing tangible. If I see a leg extension, I know what that thing does. It does a leg extension and it works your quad or knee extension. If I see an open turf, it is 100% up to my imagination. And where I was like going with that example before of that, all right, you have a problem. We want to create it as a complicated thing. We want to have some sort of start and finish and a order to that chaos that we are ensuing with complex open adaptive systems of the athletes. And we want to really constrain that to a very simple binary list of things that I need to do. So if I have a rack, it's probably going to fall into a push-pull hinge and squat with a barbell, right? That's pretty simple. And the nuance and the variation I can do is infinite, whether I start to toggle the exercise selection or the variables associated with it. But the truth is, when I see open space, that gets into this, we are now addressing a very chaotic or even complex, meaning there's no direct order on how to utilize it. And then it gets into, all right, do I struggle with that space? And do I look at that space as a very intimidating thing that I really don't know where to start? And we see a lot of conversations around, how do you structure your movement prep, or how do you structure your speed session? And yeah, it probably falls into a very simplistic way to do that. We got to sprint hard. We want to get faster. We got to do change of direction if we want to become more agile or having a more effective transition to what they're doing in sport. We could probably see plyometrics of, yeah, shortened ground contact time. But all that becomes so much more challenging when we just have a blank canvas. So the exercise I utilize in the foundations course is, I start to make everyone start to create a mind map. Start with the central problem and just start creating clusters of bubbles that are related to that problem. And wherever that cluster is, it's probably telling you where you're hardwired to go to or navigate to. And show me your weight room. You can tell me your philosophy. That's the same thing we get with the mind map. And I'm like, where are you making the most bubbles? The area that you want to just scratch off and say, I want to go in an area that's not in that direction. And the idea behind a mind map is to open up neural pathways that are hardwired to go in one direction. And I think the same thing for an open turf or whatever surface area that doesn't have any equipment. It's just a blank canvas. It's open. It's completely nondescript. It's not determined. And you have an incredible opportunity to do something you've never done. And that's scary and intimidating, especially if you got 110 football guys in front of you and you're staring at them going, I got to make sure that we are getting through everything we need to do in a timely and organized manner, but it's actually translating to performance. And you might see a open space lead into overly structured. I've seen programs that are doing foam roll on the whistle. I've seen about a 30 exercise inventory list, and it's not coaching any quality, but just hammering through stuff. And I think that's the reaction to feeling insecure and anxious around having open space, is controlling that environment more, where it's a blank canvas. Like, you can draw a Bob Ross mountain with some trees, or you can do an abstract painting. There's no real predetermined. The value of art is it's non-specific to anyone. It's just open, and beauty is in the eye of the beholder. And that open space means a whole lot of different things for a whole lot of different people. And that's the part where I really like to look at weight rooms and overall facilities and go, how do they leverage this? There's very minimal ways that we can structure our weight room. We talked about it last episode, what between the rack base versus a, or two episodes between rack base and assembly line. There's going to be a finite amount of ways you can do something in there versus an open base and the movement prep and the speed, the plyos, et cetera. Maybe you're doing small sided games, like all that stuff has a never ending order that can go into it. It can be different every single time. That's a pretty interesting way to approach stuff. And you can also see the more creative types as opposed to the more pragmatic types do really well in open space and they feel empowered, invigorated, and they feel free versus in a weight room, they feel confined. And you might see that with your really athletic athletes that are so good at everything and they just really do well in open space. You see their body language change. You see their personality change versus you put them in a weight room. You're basically putting a bird in a cage. And that part, I think there's a reaction to that that you should be cognizant of and you should be aware of. And I know I'm getting pretty off the traditional path here of Tim, very pragmatic and there's a logic and order to everything. But I know my shortcomings and my limitations and I'm always conscious of when I'm on a turf. You want to see me anxious, get me in open space in front of a bunch of guys with a non-determined script. You're going to see me very uncomfortable. And I think that's a really good thing for me to be aware of and conscious of and being there. And your instinct are, let me get a bunch of stuff in there and start filling up that space to give me more constraints. I think you should really be cognizant of that when you inherit a weight room. And if you have a bunch of stuff that's going to limit your decisions, that would be the time to expand your horizons and start to look at it from, this is a blank canvas. What do I absolutely need here? And how does that format and how does that go? And it gives your athletes a different perspective on just how you're solving really interesting problem sets.
What about the other way around where we don't have as much space? For example, in our weight room here, we got that little strip of turf out front. If we're going to do a field day in that big open space, like we got to take a day for it because we only get 35 minutes. But let's say we couldn't do that. This is all we got. What would that look like? Would you utilize any specific tools, any specific drills? What are you thinking there?
So this is where I see a lot of mistakes. I think a lot, and you see it with people who, let's say that you're a assistant strength coach at a power four school with an indoor, and then you go to a lower level, like a non-power four, or you get to a high school and you try to force a square peg in a round hole. And you start to see very small spaces and you start to see coaches forcing sprint work in a weight room with a bunch of racks. Or you start to say, we got to push a prowler, we got to push a sled, or I get a tank because I can do that on my weight room floor. And you're pushing sleds over platforms and stuff like that. I think that when you don't have space is you got to completely abandon what you would do with space because there's a lot more risk. There's just a lot more stuff to run into in that like concept. And I just talked about it a lot with Coach Boyle on his podcast. And he's like, you kept mentioning Murphy's Law in rack base versus assembly line base. And anything that can happen will happen, but that goes up exponentially when you start to have more things and more people. That whatever the worst possible scenario could happen goes up when things are going faster, things are heavier, and there's more people involved. And as we start to look through, oh, I got to do my speed work. So I got to do acceleration, top end speed. I got to do plyometrics, change direction work, all the stuff, right? We know we have to address this if we want to prepare our athletes as much as humanly possible. But then I get a weight room that's 3,000 square feet and it has 10 racks and there's not much room to go three people to a rack and there's not much elbow room to do your job. And, well, I'm going to do sprint work in the weight room. Don't. Like, you don't have to do it if the risk is too far better than the reward or far more than the reward. And that part, I think, is you got to be adaptable to your environment. So if you don't have the space to do the things that you want to do, you probably should really think about not doing it because it's going to only lead to eventually someone getting hurt. And a good example of this is I have a small turf area at one of my gyms and we had sleds and I was like, all right, we could push a sled on here. It was just too many people, too many sleds, and it was too risky. And I saw it every single time. So I abandoned it. I just started to go, this isn't worth it. I can't do sled pushes. I can't do sprints. Although I had a 110 yard indoor practice field where I could do that. I could set up 10 prowlers on one side and I could do top end speed on the other side and you're not even going to come close to hitting each other versus I can't set up three sleds to do sled pushes with my clients in a class of up to 18. Like I had to abandon. And that's you're forcing it. You're forcing it because you're having a hard time adapting to a different environment. And that blank canvas is now a pretty confined canvas and you got to fill in a 1x1 square in this big overall thing that majority of the painting's done. You don't have to do an abstract painting with inside of an impressionist painting on that in that weight room. You need to just finish the painting. And that part for me, as I start to look through working high school, Division III, and then having the opportunity to work at an ACC school, a Pac-12 school, which at the time was a thing. I don't know what it's going to be called anymore.
Now, right?
Yeah. pack. They're added four teams, or they're called the six pack, I heard.
Yeah, that's a good one.
It is. Yeah, I thought that was really funny. And then I go to an academy with a tremendous amount of resources and tons of space. And then I go to a commercial gym again. And I remember when I opened my first gym in 2017, and it was a 1,200 square foot weight room and an 800 square foot turf. And I was like, oh, wow, I'm coming from a place where I had endless places to run and do stuff. And I had not only an indoor, I had a practice field that I can do as much as I want. There was no shortage of room for me. And then I go back to that and like, forget everything I just did in the past 10, 15 years of my college strength and conditioning career. Go back to Division III, go back to high school. Go back to what I would do with nothing and no space and a bunch of athletes that aren't going to be as aware as they should be. All right, I got to be accommodating to that. And I got to be malleable to the environment and really associate that. So plyometrics, okay, it's going to be in place and stationary. Change of direction work, it's going to be some, maybe some like constrained extensive plyo work or just short rapid fire footwork drills, whether I'm going to do a box drill or I'm going to do a line drill, maybe jump rope. That's like the extent of my extensive plyo stuff. I'm going to do some in-place counter movement jump. Change of direction work, like hard 5-10 fives, L drills, nope. Speed cutting, nope. Start doing some top end speed, nope. But then you start to figure out ways to work around it. Like I can work top end speed by getting a curved treadmill and working front side mechanics. I can get acceleration mechanics by doing wall drills. And yeah, is it as good as sprinting or doing wicket runs? I think anybody who's listening to this would probably say no. But it's best I can do with the context and the environment I have. And it makes me more capable in that and saying, all right, this is what I got to do. And I would talk a lot about that with any professional athlete that would hit me up. I want to work out with you. Here's where I'm going to come up short. Do you think that would be as much of a limiting factor to what you need right now? And do you need to explore other options? And that's just the reality of the beast. And I didn't create a facility to accommodate professional athletes. I created to create a great place to train for some adult gen pop that want to have really high quality strength and conditioning. And what do they need? And what is it? Absolute most amount of space I can get away with while still making a profit. And there's just a difference of setup. I mean, at Army, at USC, at Georgia Tech, a little warmer weather, I can run outside year round. I had a little indoor turf I could use. I had a bunch of stuff. In Army, I had a massive indoor turf that I could use. So all that stuff, let's just forget all that and let's start from scratch. And if I go to a high school tomorrow, it could be that same thing. What do I have availability to? What do I know I could do? And then how do I close that gap with the space that I don't have?
Yeah, so it really just boils back down to chances are we're inheriting some situation and we can't try to, if you only have a hammer, everything's a nail. Wow.
Yeah.
Got a tongue twister there, but we got there.
Yep.
Oh, man. Do you got anything else you want to add, specific tools? Because before we were talking like the 1080 sprint, I think those would be good to get into.
Yeah, I do. So one thing that I think is often missed on some of the indoor practice facilities is they're shared.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like you have a complete single usage. And you see this a lot with weight rooms of the, I shut the lights off, I lock the doors, I'm not worried about it overnight. But indoors, if you don't know, but you should be worried. There's going to be a community of folks in there. It's a way you justify having this grand thing. Because it's good, right? It's a good thing that the indoor practice field is servicing the larger community outside of just that. And it goes into the whole premise behind ride sharing. If 90% of the time you have your car, a depreciable asset, it sits parked, right? And the same thing with an indoor, that if it's only used for an hour a day and it's this grand space that costs this much to keep the lights on and heat and air condition, that's not a really great investment. But if it serves a community where they can, winter teams can run practices and have a great opportunity to move and stay active, it's awesome. But if you got a run rocket, if you got a 1080, those things aren't cheap. And you got to figure out a way to get those things off the turf and into a safe location so they don't get damaged or stolen. Fool me once kind of mentality. So the process of setting that up, and this is where I always look at it from my staff. And I know this probably feels like it's not related, but definitely is a quick way to really make your staff disenfranchised and frustrated is setting up 10 run rockets, setting up 10 trap bars for a strong man with 225 pounds on there, setting up prowlers or sleds with a bunch of weight on there, setting up an elaborate thing every single day with no real conversation about minimizing the ergonomics and the transit time. So if you want to get into these things and you want to have really high-end tools and you know that you're going to have this inevitability of shared space with a bunch of people who don't have the same perspective on the value of these tools or how to use them, or just quite frankly, think it would be great to have for themselves, you need to be cognizant of them. And having a plan when I invest into these tools. And let's just talk about, all right, what does some of these tools do? And for a sled, that's pretty simple, right? There's a push it or pull it, and you get into the, I want to minimize velocity drop. So maybe I want to have a percentage of velocity based off my best 10, my 20, my 40, et cetera. And I utilize a pushing sled because I want to get a little heavier resistance, or I utilize a pulling sled because I want to have some sort of resistance, but not in a gross amount that's going to have this massive velocity drop and it's going to be more ground contact time. Heavier things don't need as long to go. Lighter things need longer to go. So if I'm pulling a sled with 10% of my body mass, I'm going to need 30 to 40 yards. If I'm pushing a sled with 100% of my body mass and maybe even more, I only need 10 to 20. So if I have a 30-yard turf that I can use, if you're going to invest in a pulling-based sled or a lighter resistance, you might be better served investing in the thing that I can load up heavier. And when we look at a Run Rocket or a 1080, that's trying to get, some of these things have a tremendous amount of resistance. But when we're thinking about it, it's probably the bigger value is to have some sort of mild resistance for extended period of time or extended distance. You might be better served if you have a smaller turf area, let's say that you have your weight room and a 20-yard turf, to invest into things that are loaded up heavier. Now, I think the same thing for this like light, heavy continuum. So med ball work, that we want to lift something heavy and want to throw something light. And when we think about setting up our med ball work or our plyometric work, the amortization or lack thereof, the slower it is, usually means it's heavier. And the faster that amortization or that transition from an eccentric concentric is shorter or smaller, the lighter it is. And when we think about a med ball or anything we're trying to propel, there's two conversations to be had. There's a, I need to throw this thing really far, whether it's a med ball, backwards over a med ball toss or a shot put toss or something of that nature. Or I need to do this something really heavy where I'm doing an over-shoulder clean, more strongman type of stuff. So there's that continuum. But there's a whole nother conversation about, usually with these indoor spaces, there's a bunch of walls. So do you have accessibility to a wall where you can do extensive med ball work? Or maybe you didn't have enough foresight to go to the person that was designing that room saying, I don't want sheetrock all over these walls. I want cinder block or a solid wall where I can throw against, because I only have 20 yards of turf because I can't projectile something 30 yards. All right, I need to get into this. Give me a med ball wall with that. So we're thinking about like extended distance work with light resistance. You're going to need a lot of space. If we're thinking about, I want to projectile a light med ball as far as humanly possible, you're going to need a lot of space. But if you have small, you're going to need heavier resistance sleds or heavier resistance when you're running. And then you're going to need either heavier med balls or a wall to throw against. And all of that being considered, it gets into this. If you have a 10 by 20 turf, you're probably going to find heavier sleds and you're probably going to have to find a med ball wall or heavier med balls. And I know that sounds like limiting, but you just got to be realistic. You can't do a 1080 sprint when you only have 20 yards of run. You could, but I don't think it's as valuable. I don't think the tool is as good as it could be based off the amount you need to spend it. You're better off just getting a very like cheap sled, loading the hell out of that and working your acceleration mechanics, which you'd have longer ground contact times anyway, and then getting either a med ball wall or a heavy ass med ball and trying to clean that and move that thing and do strongman as much as possible in that small space. And that all this equipment that we can get. And I go back to the original part, though, of heavier things are harder to move. So if you have a staff that's having to constantly move stuff 30 yards or 100 yards across like a chasm from the weight room to that, and you're worried about it getting stolen, do it yourself as a head coach and say, okay, this is actually above and beyond. don't take pass the buck on that, because your staff is the one breaking their backs to get this thing set up. And I'm biased on that, but I've had multiple situations where I've had to set up really elaborate movement prep and speed, agility, quickness, and plyometric, because it wasn't well thought out where we're going to store this stuff in between sessions. And it goes into even the movement prep too. There's a, we're going to do it as a group, and we're going to do a lot of like body weight, minimalist equipment, and just, hey, blow a whistle and just knee hugs, world's greatest stretch, et cetera. And then there's, let's get your own individual island. You're going to grab a mini band, a foam roll, a jump stretch band, a hurdle, and we're going to go through all these things that there, and I'm going to set up 100 of them. And that's a lot of equipment that you got to think about as well. And as we go through stuff like this, you get into the, well, probably be easier if we just do this in pods or stations. So we'll do mini band here, we'll do foam roll there, and we'll do jump stretch, like stretch stuff here. And there's all that conversation around, okay, if I only have like a 10 by 20 area and I have 100 guys in there and we're doing three stations, maybe you have to scratch some of this stuff. And from an equipment standpoint, from an organizational standpoint, the space that you do or don't have has a big impact on what you should or shouldn't have. And there's always a nice to have, and maybe you have the budget to get some of these things, but you should really think twice about investing into it. And then when I see another wrinkle of this, of where are you guys storing this in between sessions or after sessions, and how much utilization you're getting out of it, and is it really congruent with the space that you have, you start to inventory of, was that a good or bad buy? And there's never going to be an administration that's going to go, okay, let's go through this process of evaluating the quality of purchases that you made, because you always get in a hill. But this is why I get into the, is why it was at the beginning, I said a lot of stuff is just not useful for that environment. So if I have a small like turf area and I have these like elaborate speed tools that are better for larger spaces, and they're just sitting there collecting dust, like you might actually be better served getting on Facebook Marketplace and trying to sell it and get some stuff that's better for that facility. And I know that's hard for people to go, I know how much that cuff costs, and I know the potential value. This value is limited by what you don't have. So you need to address that. And then I think there's a conversation to have about, man, like a good old fashioned hill. And I see there's a lot of like weight rooms that are building this into their weight room.
Yeah.
I think it's awesome. I think it's great. And I think it's probably one of the, still to this day, the, you look at the slope of a hill, like from a 15 to a 30 degree slope, which is just pretty steep in terms of slope, and the potential ground contact time being equivalent to the resistance in a sled. That part, it's really invaluable. And I think a lot of times you get into that, how do they get that? If you're looking at it from, we're going to have a second level with maybe some cardiovascular equipment to just appease the powers that be, because they're like administration and head coaches, like, where am I going to be able to do elliptical watching team train or watching film or just coming in there? And you're like, all right, you want to build a second level for some ancillary pieces just because you feel like it's necessary. It's not out of my pocket. I don't care. That's when you say, instead of stairs, can I just put a hill?
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I might be going up 20 feet. Okay. That might be too steep of a slope. There's a good conversation to be had there about doing that. And a lot of times we'll try to find a slope surface that's anywhere, and we rely on maybe a concrete, and luckily to some tendinopathies pretty quickly, just because a lot of pounding. And you're like, if you're going to do that multiple times a week or multiple times in the course of an off season, it's just going to beat the crap out of some knees and back. So having that turfed can make a big difference. But the stuff that you want to go through, let's say like perfect world, you can get a light resistance that you can go really far with, whether it's a 1080 or Unrocket. Kratos is that one coming out that's just game changing from the cost of it and the portability of it. So if you're on the market for looking for a consistent variable resistance that you want to have a acceleration or top end speed focus, man, you need to be on the lookout for that, because it's way more economical. But that's if I have a lot of space. And then we look at very small confined spaces. Okay, I can grab some heavy ass things like prowlers and root hogs and load them up and really be able to do some sled drags and sled pushes and really challenge the force continuum on that acceleration mechanic. But that's going to be probably driven to more acceleration base coming from a static position and short distances with longer ground contact times. And then from plyometric, if you can get a med ball wall, you should always try to get that no matter what. If you can get a space where you can projectile med balls as far as humanly possible, like, great, that's awesome, do it. Having readily available. And I would say too, if you have a storage area around your turf, you should utilize that and not feel inclined to keep that stuff in the weight room. There's no purpose to having a run racket in a weight room.
Right.
What I was just saying before, the risk and reward. And I'm sure there's people who got it and they're sitting in the weight room. I get it. Like, I've been there and I talked to administration. It's better to have than not have, and I'll figure out what to do with it. If I'm keeping in the weight room, it's just basically like playing with forbidden fruit, and you're going to sit there and say like, all right, let's have them do some run rocket over these platforms. Like, it's just there, right? Some young, naive strength coach is not associating that these kids are not invincible and they can get hurt in the weight room just doing stuff like that. And you're like, oh, okay, maybe I need to address that issue and not put that there. So if you want to get these things and you don't have a storage thing around where you're going to be running and doing this stuff, like I would say, if you're storing in the weight room, maybe not the best decision. And then the final aspect would be change direction. And change direction is still to this day, minimalist equipment. Maybe you can set up some eye hooks against the wall. So like we talked about the med ball wall. So if you get an eye hook, you go down to Home Depot or you have someone that's really handy. They can set a bi hook into either a stud or into the concrete or a cinder block, and that's anchored into the wall. You can set up some bungees or some jump stretch bands where you can work some resisted frontal plane work like shuffles or crossover step and karaoke, and you can work some overloaded. Maybe you're working decelerating mechanics by starting off with a stretch position and pulling them in. The one thing I would say again, though, is you need enough of a gap between that eye hook wall and where people are going to stop. You don't want them stopping with 1 foot of that. And if it's, I just don't have enough space to move off the wall, maybe you should be very careful of that. And easily you could turn that into a eyes, wise, T's, W station with bands for throwing athletes. And yeah, you can do that and that's fine. So you can always work that stuff. And especially if a lot of your baseball guys or quarterbacks or discus and jab people are working in the indoor and working through some of their throws, like throwing work, and they want to get some shoulder health stuff, and you have the eye hooks there. But these are very cheap, very affordable things to do, and you could just set them up there. Just if you have no idea what you're doing, make sure you get a paid professional to put that into a wall, because you don't want that thing snapping out, because that's a big liability. Yeah, exactly. Know your limitations as a strength coach. Like, my poor wife, like, I think she has expectations that I'm good at things. I'm like, no, I'm pretty limited in what I'm good at. I can't fix anything or solve any problems with stuff I have no idea. And please don't ask me to go anything outside of strength, conditioning, nutrition, performance, mindset around that. But if it's an opportunity to do that, wall space and med ball walls and eye hooks and work and change direction. But in terms of like the power cutting and speed cutting, power cutting's okay in smaller like radius turf areas. Speed cutting gets expanded out, just like we're working top end speed. And now that stuff makes a big difference over time to really having a very comprehensive and valuable use of the space. And from a organizational standpoint, I know there's probably some folks out there that like football world. You can't get outside of the fact that these guys are savants when it comes down to organizing large groups. Mm-hmm. And if you watch their movement prep, I get so like jaded on this one, because show me a track warm up and I'll say this is just a waste of time. Like, I've seen track just hemorrhage time and just do stuff that just, this is stupid. This is just unorganized chaos. And then I see a football workout where people are like, this is overly rigid. It's overly structured. It's too constrained. Yeah, but they're getting everything they need to get in that movement. So there's always a middle ground here and some sort of that. I'm watching a track warm up and they're doing the full like progression for a linear speed day, and they're working all the A stuff and everything they're going through. And it's a very comprehensive deal, but it's variable from one person to the next and who's doing what and the level of effort and the execution they're doing. Go to a football offseason speed, agility, quickness workout and get a little bit more of that authoritative, like, all right, this matters. Because what you'll be good at what you emphasize. And if your movement prep is disorganized, scattered, chaotic, and we have variable execution and variable compliance, the risk goes up when you're doing high intense, high threshold stuff. And the overall efficiency in what you're doing stuff isn't there. So having that blend, okay, like I want to be aware of what the best track athletes in the world do. Maybe like I watch a football or soccer practice and I'm like, oh yeah, these are good drills. These are good games. I can see how this translates. But then getting over to a football offseason workout and go, okay, like there's a value to this organization, and having that blend between I need a certain rigidity to getting as really good quality of a session as possible, But matching that with the fluidity of, they've got open space and it's blank canvas, and you should be more open and abstract with this notion of good utilization of that space.
This was awesome. You dropped some bombs talking about logistics and in ways that I don't think conversations are probably having happened enough when these big purchases are happening. So I think it's really important that you hit those the way you did. This was great. Thanks, Tim.
Hell yeah. Awesome, Corey.